Thank you. Continuing in Matthew chapter 26, I found last week's episode so touching. I'm constantly being reminded of how wrong my view of Jesus was for so many years. And I can't blame it on the church I was raised in, though I frequently do, because I had a Bible too. I mean, I could have read, I could have drawn close to the Lord, and but I had a relationship to church people and more than I did to Jesus. And how wonderful it is, the more that I know him, and I see the way that he thinks, demonstrated. Jesus said, you want to know what the Father's like? Just watch me. Watch what I'm doing. I still think that's true, folks. You want to know what God the Father is like? Don't ask a theology professor. Don't look at church people. Look at Jesus. Examine him. Study him. Look at who he thought was important. Look at the way that he lived out his life. It was a life lived to demonstrate for us what a human being, always doing God's will, always listening for his voice, always obeying, what that life looks like. And it also was a life lived out to show us God's love. And we continue in that vein today on the subject of failure. It's kind of, our culture has shifted so radically that I think a lot of people don't realize that failure is part of the educational process. It is. It always has been. It's part of the scientific process, and most true scientists realize that they're going to invest time and energy into things that are going to fail. But that's part of how they learn what you don't do. And that's part of the process. I have heard somebody say one time that the church is the only army that shoots its own wounded. And it always makes me wince when I hear that, because it is true in many places, and we ought to be ashamed of ourselves if we ever do that. And one of the best ways that I know to change that way of thinking is to fail yourself, is to need mercy. And we're going to see Peter at his worst moments over the next couple of weeks. But I want you to notice in this episode where Jesus tells Peter, Peter, you think you're strong, you're not. You are going to fail. Jesus predicts Peter's failure. He predicts Peter's restoration. And he already has something for him to do. And I remember the first time that I saw these things clearly, it just completely challenged my whole view of performance-based Christianity that I had been raised in. You can work up a really good altar call and, you know, get people to go to the mission field and give lots of money if you can just make them feel guilty for not being devoted enough. And so you get a bunch of people that when they find out that they're not devoted like they thought they were, rather than it being something that motivates them to be better, it pushes them away from God, and they believe God is disappointed in them. And I think the way we're going to look over the next couple of weeks, the way that God is disappointed is not the same way that you and I are disappointed. So look at very carefully as this unfolds. We're going to look at about 10 verses today, beginning with verse 31, and stick your finger over in Luke chapter 22, because Luke adds a few statements that Jesus makes to Peter that happen at this time. The other guys don't mention it in the Gospels, and it's very powerful. It will tell you maybe, I hope, some things about God's heart that you never knew. Is God shocked when we make promises and we break them? Absolutely not. Does it hurt him? Well, yeah, it does. But for a different reason, maybe, than it hurts us when people make us promises and they don't keep them. From God's perspective, God doesn't have an ego to be defended. He knows who he is. And he also knows us, and he knows who we are. And I think that if we can see this passage very clearly, if God will write it in our hearts, it'll change the way we treat each other. It will change the way we look at ourselves, and what certainly has made me fall in love with Jesus over and over every time I study it. We saw Jesus telling his disciples what was going to happen at the Last Supper. He explained to them. Of course, they didn't understand it then. They didn't even really listen very carefully when he told them he was going to be put to death, be buried, and raised from the dead 3 days later. We're going to see the seventh time in this passage that he's told them about the resurrection, and they forgot. It was just a few hours before the crucifixion, and in all of the mixture of fear and anger and hurt and the emotions of failure and disillusionment, all the stuff that was flowing like wine. The problem is when emotions are flowing like wine, lies are also flowing like wine. And the saddest verse, I think, in this entire account is way over in verse 56, when it says, "And then all of the disciples deserted him and ran away." So, how did Jesus feel about that? Well, let's look at what he says. Matthew 26, verse 31. He's still in the upper room where he's had the Passover meal with the disciples, explained what it meant. And in that same spirit, he says, Jesus told them, "This very night you will all fall away on account of me." If you have an older translation like the King James Bible, it might say, "You will all be offended." That's archaic English. The word simply means to trip and stumble in your commitment to where you lose your place on the path. And my NIV translates it, "You will all fall away on account of me. For it is written," and here he quotes from Zechariah chapter 13. Last week we looked at a quotation from Zechariah chapter 11. "I will strike the shepherd, and the sheep of the flock will be scattered." By the way, this is one of the reasons I didn't want to be a pastor, because it's like getting a t-shirt with a target on it and wearing that every day. So you're all going to fall away. The shepherd's going to be struck. The sheep are going to scatter, just like the Bible says. But always listen carefully for those buts when Jesus says something that shocks you. But well, listen to what he says right after that. It could change everything. "But after I have risen, I will go ahead of you into Galilee." In other words, I'll meet you in Galilee. Now, the interesting thing is Jesus knew they were going to run away to Galilee. They didn't know they were going to run away to Galilee. They were panicked. When all of this stuff went down, they just ran away. Risen from the dead, he met them there. Peter replied, "Even if all fall away on account of you, I never will." I'm sure Peter meant that with all of his heart, but he was wrong. We're going to look in next week, I believe, at the five steps to Peter's downfall. I'll briefly mention them today because it's too important of a message. I'm watching people take some of those very steps right now. And so it's worth looking at 2 weeks in a row. But this is step one, Peter's downfall. He thought he was strong. "Even if all fall away on account of you, I never will. I tell you the truth," Jesus answered, "this very night, before the rooster crows, you will disown me 3 times. But Peter declared, "Even if I have to die with you, I will never disown you." Now, to be fair, Peter, the blunt one, spoke it out. But the end of this verse says, "And all the other disciples said the same." Just tiptoe down to verse 56, and let's read that again. "And then all of the disciples deserted him and ran away." So Jesus knew it was going to happen. Let's flip over to Luke 22, because in this interchange with Peter, beginning at verse 31. I just want to read you a couple of verses, and we'll spend some time on it today because it is life-altering. Any of you have a name that when you were in trouble and you were going to get spanked, if you got spanked, that your parents called you? And some of you, I know it's not a clean name. It's a dirty name. It depends on the parents. But with me, if I ever heard my middle name, if I heard Robert Marcus, you come here right this minute, I knew I was in trouble. So the last time we saw Peter, whose real name was Simon, Jesus said, "You're going to be Peter," which is a small fragment of stone. Well, notice the name Jesus addresses Peter. This is right in the middle of Peter's protestations. I know these other clowns. You probably can't count on them, but don't worry. I won't fall away. Listen to what he says, verse 31. "Simon, Simon, Satan has begged to sift you like wheat." The "you" is plural, meaning Satan wants to sift all of you. "But I have prayed for you, Simon," and that "you" is singular. "I've prayed for you, Simon, that your faith may not fail." Now, he just told him, in Matthew's account and earlier in Luke's account, he just told him he was going to disown him three times. "I've prayed for you, not that you won't disown me. You're going to fail. But I'm prayed for you, Simon, that after you fail, your faith won't fail. And when you have been restored or turned back, strengthen your brothers." But he replied, "Lord, I'm ready to go with you to prison and to death." And Jesus answered, "I tell you, Peter, before the rooster crows today, you'll deny me three times. You'll deny that you even know me." That's in Luke's account of what Matthew leaves out, and I think that's important. We'll spend some time on that today. Flipping back to Matthew now, picking up at verse 36. "Then Jesus went with his disciples to a place called Gethsemane, and he said to them, 'Sit here.'" By the way, we'll get to go there in the spring. You'll see olive trees that were there when this happened. The way olive trees grow, they send out shoots that grow other trees up, and there's trees there right now that are the same genetic material, the same tree as when Jesus and his disciples were in Gethsemane. It kind of gives you the shivers. "And he said to them, 'Sit here while I go over there and pray.' And he took Peter and the two sons of Zebedee," that's James and John. So Peter, James, and John, the three problem children, he took them along with him, and he began to be sorrowful and troubled. There is no way to accurately translate those Greek words and carry the full intensity. They are fat, heavy words. Sorrowful and troubled is watered down by comparison. Listen to what Jesus says in verse 38. He said to them, "My soul is overwhelmed with sorrow to the point of death." This is not Jesus the whiner. This is the truth. He says, "I feel like I'm dying. Stay here and keep watch with me." Going a little farther, he fell with his face to the ground and prayed, "My Father," that's the Aramaic word Abba, which means daddy. It's the tenderest word a child could say to their father. And any of you see The Passion of the Christ, Mel Gibson's film? I have so much respect for that actor that he learned Aramaic just to be authentic. But if you look at this passage, you'll see how many times he uses the word Abba, which means daddy. I'm going to read it that way. It's "my father" sounds wrong. It's too distant. This is a word of a child throwing himself in his father's arms and wrapping his arm around his neck because he's afraid. So he fell on the ground with his face to the ground and prayed, "Daddy, if it's possible, may this cup be taken from me, yet not as I will, but as you will. And then he returned to his disciples and he found them sleeping. Could you men not keep watch with me for 1 hour? And he asked Peter, Peter, watch and pray so that you will not fall into temptation. And again, the you is singular. He's saying, Peter, buddy, this is not, I just told you, you're in danger. This is not the time to be sleeping. Step two to Peter's downfall is Peter didn't listen to this warning either. The spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak. That's the title of our study today. Those of you who have discovered that in your lives know that that is a bittersweet thing. It's bitter because if you're the kind of person like Peter that thought you were greatly devoted and you overestimated your devotion, it's very painful. It's sweet because of all the songs we sang today about how merciful he is. He went away a second time, verse 42, and he prayed, Daddy, if it is not possible for this cup to be taken away, unless I drink it, may your will be done. And when he came back, he again found them sleeping because their eyes were heavy. Luke says they were worn out with grief. Have you ever been worn out with grief? I know exactly what that feels like. They were just worn out with grief. And so he left them. In other words, he let them sleep. And he went away once more and he prayed the third time, saying the same thing. And then he returned to the disciples and he said to them, are you still sleeping and resting? Look, the hour is near and the Son of Man is being betrayed into the hands of sinners. Rise, let us go. Here comes my betrayer. We won't get farther than that today. But just for an hors d'oeuvre for next week, look at the very next word that Jesus says to Judas as he comes to betray him. He calls him friend. The last thing he called him at the Last Supper, he called him friend. Remember, Jesus knew he was going to betray him, and he didn't treat Judas any really differently than any of the other guys, so that when Jesus said, somebody's going to betray me, nobody knew who it was. All eyes didn't turn and stare at Judas. They had no idea. They thought it, each one of them thought it was them, all except Peter. Peter was positive it wasn't him. Let's rewind back up here, and there are some wonderful things in here today. Like I said, they make me love Jesus just to see the way he deals with these people. He tells them, this very night you're all going to fall away on account of me. Strike the shepherd and the sheep are going to scatter. That's just the way that it's going to go. That prophecy in Zechariah is talking about, and we're going to see next week or the week after, because we're creeping our way through. I want to squeeze the most juice out of this that I can. But in Zechariah chapter 11, it talks about Messiah being betrayed. This is hundreds of years before this happened. And it tells how much money is going to be paid the guy who betrays him and what's going to be used with the money later. Hundreds of years before it happened. Remember last week, the way the whole thing happened was Judas came to the religious leaders who wanted to kill Jesus, and he says, if I turn him over to you, how much will you give me? They were the ones that said 30 pieces of silver. Were they trying to fulfill scripture? No way, but they did. Interesting how many times Jesus told his disciples what was going to happen simply. It was going to happen whether they believed him or not. They didn't believe him. But he told them so that they would not be stumbled when it did. just like he warns us. But we don't pay attention, and then when things go down the way he told us, we're blown away, and he wants them to be stable. I just love that he repeats himself. And they still forgot. But he told them anyway. So I love this scenario because it sounds so familiar to me in my life. Once again, go back to the thought I said in the very beginning. Failure is part of education. We're going to see that Jesus tells Peter he's going to fail. Peter doesn't think he's going to fail. Jesus makes no attempt to intervene and prevent Peter from failing. He doesn't stop Peter from failing. He warns him. He gives him an opportunity in Gethsemane when Peter's asleep, saying, Peter, you need to be praying, buddy. You need to be paying attention. You, personally, are the one in danger. You think you're okay, but you're not. But Peter needed to fail for lots of reasons that we'll look at later. So Peter is given the choices that you and I are given. God says, stay away from there. It'll hurt you. He says, you need to be feeding yourself spiritually, because if you don't, you're going to be hit by a tidal wave when you're weak and you'll drown. And we don't believe him. And we fall for the distractions. And we look back later, and I know this personally is like my life story of looking back at and looking how I was warned and I was told and I didn't pay attention. And I made the mistake that even though I'm forgiven, I can never undo it. And regret is a horrible thing, and it's all the more horrible if, like Peter, you're the kind of person that said, Jesus, I would die for you. I don't think Peter was exaggerating. In his heart, that's the way he felt. But he overestimated his devotion under certain circumstances, like we always do. And he underestimated his flesh. And that's always a bad mistake. When I bought my new table saw, I have a big Sears Craftsman table saw that's got an engine like a dirt bike on it. I mean, it's powerful. And I called my brother to do the brotherly thing. Na 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 na, my table saw is more powerful than your table saw. And he didn't respond the way he usually does and go out and buy a bigger one. What he did was he said, are you afraid of it? I said what every guy would say, heck no. No, that's what I wanted to say. But I said, yeah, I guess I am a little bit. And he says, good. You're afraid of it? You'll keep your fingers. The minute you stop being afraid of it is when you're in danger. Folks, that's exactly the way it is with my flesh. The minute I think I'm not like other men, I've got this wired, the minute I can look at somebody else and think I am more spiritual than they are, I am in danger. Satan's planning his strategy, deploying his troops. The angels are dialing 911 because they know pretty soon I'm going to need an ambulance and some EMTs spiritually because I think I'm strong. So let's watch this unfold. Jesus told them, Matthew 26, verse 31, he told them this very night, all of you are going to fall away. Skandalizo is the Greek word that's translated fall away, that the King James, I believe, translates offended. It's also translated stumbled a few places. But the word means to fall for a distraction or to trip over an object that causes you to lose your balance and fall. And when it's used figuratively, it literally can mean to fall completely away from your trust in Jesus. It's a powerful word. You know what I find really interesting? In John 17, where Jesus prays that wonderful prayer that includes us, he says an amazing thing. I was just thinking about this on the way to church. Because all of these guys deserted Jesus, every single one of them. some more ignominiously than others, but they all did. But in John 17, Jesus says, Father, I haven't lost anybody that you gave to me except one, the son of perdition, speaking of Judas. So you think, okay, wait a minute. These guys all bailed out. Yeah, but that's not always the end of the story. Thank God. Peter, the biggest failure of them all, because he was the biggest boaster of them all, God already had a plan for him. And he was the one chosen to strengthen his brothers. Go figure. Is that the way we work? I read in a Forbes magazine an intriguing article about the CEO of a Fortune 500 company who had a unique policy for filling his top executive positions. He researched and found guys who had failed in that office, and those were the only guys he would hire. And the reason is, he did research on their failure and found out that 92% of them didn't fail the second time. And so, just calculating it out, he figured, okay, I got a better chance with this guy who blew it royally than I do with these guys who've not fallen. Now, is that backwards to the way humans think? I look at that guy and I think, my friend, you are not far from the kingdom of God, because you understand something that Jesus knows about Peter.